The second part of this morning session, and it is dedicated to the policy. And the first presentation will be done by Ernest. It's about the policies under discussion within the other areas in the within the other areas. Okay, Ernest.
Okay, we're going to look at the policies that are currently under discussion or were recently approved in the communities of the various regional internet registries. Next, we'll look at IPv4 related policies. At AFRINIC, we have two IPv4 related policies, and that is the policy for provider independent or end user assignments. Or direct assignments to end-user organizations. And the policy right now is at the board level waiting to be approved. Oh, it's approved. Okay, that policy has been approved by the board. Oh, when was that? Oh, okay. So every AFRINIC-related policy in this presentation that says board probably means the board has approved it. Okay, also there's a policy for temporary assignments and also assignments for critical infrastructure. It has also been approved by the Board of Directors. At RIPE-NCC, there's a policy for the HD ratio proposal for additional IPv4 address space requests and is currently under review. I'm not sure what the review stage means. Maybe if anybody wants clarification, then somebody from RIPE-NCC can explain further. But it probably means...
Hello, this is Phyllis Yilmaz from the RIPE-NCC. Review phase is after the discussion phase, so proposal is made, it is discussed, and once it is ready to be made a draft document, it goes to the review phase. So you put the proposal in a RIPE document as a draft, and then the community is reviewing that document, that is the review phase.
Okay, all right, thanks. Thank you. Oh, so the review phase is actually after the face-to-face meeting, a policy meeting, or it's when the community is actually discussing it?
Well, there is no strong ties in the RIPE community for the meeting times and making a proposal and the PDP life, so it can be any time, during, after, within the RIPE meeting.
Okay, all right, thanks, Phyllis. The HD ratio proposal for additional IPv4 requests is under the review phase in the RIPE region, and there is also a proposal for IP assignments for anycasting DNS, also currently under review. At APNIC and ARIN, there is no IPv4 related policy under discussion. I hope I have my facts right. At the LACNIC region, that's the South America and the Caribbean, there is a policy for additional allocations to regional internet service providers, and it's in the discussion phase. There is also a policy for analysis of alternative information for initial IPv4 address space allocations, also under discussion. There is also a policy for the additional allocation usage projection period, also under discussion, and also the policy for applying the HD ratio to IPv4 additional allocations, also currently under discussion. Looking at IPv6, the IPv6 policy proposals we have is the most recent one about provider-independent IPv6 assignments for end sites. That is for those organizations that are not LIRs. And it's still a draft. I think it is going to be presented sometime in the afternoon by Jody, who proposed it. He also actually proposed it in the other communities. Then there is also the policy for IPv6 allocations from the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority to the LIRs, also approved by the board. In the RIPE region, There is also a proposal for IPv6 assignments for any casting DNS, which is supposed to be some text to be added to the IPv6 allocation and assignment policy. It's also under review. Then there is the IPv6 allocations from IANA to the RIRs, which has been approved. Also, the same provider independent IPv6 address assignments to end sites proposed by Jody under discussion. Then the proposal to amend IPv6 assignment and utilization requirements under discussion. In the Aran region, the same proposal by Jody, IPv6 PI assignments for end sites has been adopted. I think that means the board has actually ratified it. I'm not sure. Yes, Ray.
First of all, as I reported yesterday, that was a policy proposal that was for provider independent space was not presented by Jordy. It was actually first introduced in our region in December of 2004, and another proposal was introduced in January of 2006. And the two proposals were merged, and the resulting proposal is what was adopted by the board. So right now, the board has adopted it based upon the policy process being followed. And also, we are now in the phase of getting ready to implement that policy. So it was Jordy actually did not propose his policy until after events that happened in the Aran region.
Okay, thank you, Ray, for that clarification. The other IPv6 related discussion in the Aran region is the proposal to amend the IPv6 assignment and utilization criteria, also adopted by the board. In the LACNIC region, the same policy that appears in the other regions, IPv6 allocations from IANA to the RIRs, it was adopted by the community, by the board, and also the change to the HD ratio value for additional IPv6 allocations, currently under discussion. Also, policy about IPv6 assignment to end users, I believe still this is proposed by Jody, under discussion. Then the size of IPv6 assignments, also currently under discussion. In the APNIC region, there is also still IPv6 related, the proposal to amend IPv6 assignment and utilization information under discussion. And the same global policy, IPv6 allocations from IANA to the RIRs, has been adopted. Then provider independent IPv6 assignments for end sites currently under discussion. Then abolishing of IPv6 per address fees for national internet registries also currently under discussion in the APNIC region. Son from APNIC has a clarification to make.
Yes, Son Tran from APNIC. And the IPv6 PI proposal is not there yet. It will be there soon by Jody, of course. So it will be discussed on our next meeting.
Okay, Son. Thanks for that clarification. The IPv6 PI proposal for end sites is actually not yet formally proposed in the APNIC region. Sorry about that. Autonomous system numbers, policies or discussions related to AS numbers in the various regions. In Afrinic, there was a proposal, a 4-byte AS number policy proposal, which was proposed by Jeff Houston last year. And it is under discussion in the Afrinic region, although no single comment has ever been received ever since it was posted. But yeah, it's open for discussion. Then there is the change to the criteria for assignment of AS numbers in the Afrinic region, also approved by the Board of Directors. In the RIPE region, also is the 4-byte AS number policy proposal by Jeff Houston, which is supposed to be once approved to be a modification to the current ASN assignment policies and procedures policy. It's under review in RIPE in the RIPE region. In the RN region, there's also the same policy, the 4-byte S number policy proposal, which has been adopted. The same proposal also in the LACNIC region is under discussion. And in the EPNIC region, the same 4-byte S number policy proposal received consensus from their community, but I believe is not yet adopted by their board. Other policies that are not directly IPv4, IPv6, or SN related, we only have, could identify a few in the LACNIC region. They have a discussion about who is database privacy, which was mentioned here earlier in the morning. It's under discussion. And then recovery of unused internet number resources is also currently under discussion. If any of the RIR's representatives want to make any clarifications, then they are welcome to do so. But this is all we could gather. Thank you.
Thank you, Ernest. Is there any question about this update on the policies on the RIR's communities? So we'll move on to the next presentation, which will be done by Alan Barrett, which this time is going to talk about the policies within Africa.
Okay. This session is to discuss the policies which have been proposed in the Afrinic region. In the Afrinic region, our policy development process is that... there's something funny here. Okay. Anybody can make a proposal for a new policy or to change an old policy. It comes to the same thing, really. The process for that is that the proposal gets some initial discussion on the policy working group mailing list. Anybody can subscribe to this mailing list, send an email message to policy-wg-request@afrinic.net, and you'll get an automated reply. You have to respond to that, then you'll be subscribed to the mailing list. Anybody can make proposals. After a proposal has been made, it has to be on the mailing list for at least 30 days before a face-to-face meeting such as the meeting we're at right now. At this face-to-face meeting, we discuss it. After the meeting, if there's consensus, there's a further last call period on the mailing list. And then finally, assuming that there's consensus and that the procedure has been followed correctly, then the board ratifies it and it becomes formally an Afrinic policy. So, since our last face-to-face meeting in Cairo in December 2005, there have been four policies which have been through the whole process, and they were approved by the board at a meeting a few days ago, but I don't think the approval has been announced yet, so I'm announcing it now. The board has approved these four policies for provider independent direct assignment to end users, for temporary address assignments, a small change to the ASN assignment criteria, and the proposed global policy for assignment of IPv6 space from the IANA to the RIRs. There are two proposals which are currently under discussion. They've been posted on the mailing list for 30 days or more. One of them, I think, is at 31 days or something. It's only just made the 30-day cutoff. These two policies are the 4-byte ASN proposal from Jeff Houston and the IPv6 provider independent proposal from Jordi Pallett. Okay, so I'll briefly go through the four proposals which have been approved, and then we'll spend most of the rest of the time on the proposals which are up for discussion at this face-to-face meeting. So the V4 end user proposal says that an end user can get a /24 of provider independence base provided they meet some of these criteria. Okay, either they must already have at least a /25 from an upstream ISP, then they can get a /24 for themselves, or they need to show an immediate need of at least 50% of whatever they're requesting. So if they request a /24, they need to be able to show that they can immediately use at least half of it. If they request something larger than that, like say they request a /22, they need to, again, show that they can immediately use at least half of that. So that they need to meet these criteria to receive a first /24. If they've used that and they want more, then there's some slightly different criteria. They need to show that at least 50% of their previous assignment was used within 1 year, and at least 25% was used immediately. Okay, so that was for end users. If we go back to the previous slide, that was mostly about end users. There's special conditions for critical infrastructure, which is defined as DNS root and ccTLD operators. I'm sorry, I've forgotten to modify this slide. I believe the proposal as written refers only to the root, whereas previously the proposal was a bit unclear, and the proposal was modified as a result of the Cairo meeting. Prior to Cairo, it was unclear whether it applied only to the root or also to ccTLDs and gTLDs. It was modified to make it clear that it applies only to the root. And I've failed to update the slide to show that. I'm sorry. Okay. These PI assignments will come from special blocks for this purpose. Okay. The next proposal was for temporary assignments. The idea there is that Afrinet can assign IP addresses for temporary use, for example, at conferences like this, where you have an event, you need some address space, but only for a short time. And there's some rules, like it has to be documented, it has to be temporary, you have to agree to give the space back afterwards. Okay, so this also has been approved by the board.
I'm sorry to interrupt. PC 196.200.222.102, which calls itself AVUTA, A-V-U-T-A. If that is you just lost connectivity, you need to see me, you need to bring a can of DDT spray, your machine has livestock. Thank you.
Okay. Right, the third proposal, which was recently approved by the board, is about a change in the ASN assignment criteria. It's just a very small change, which says that, as well as all the other conditions, to get an ASN assignment, you have to be a member in good standing, and that implies paying your fees. Okay. Then the proposed global policy for allocation of V6 space from the IANA to the RIRs. The same proposal has been made and approved in all five regions, and essentially, it says that the IANA will allocate /12 of V6 space to the RIRs, and there's some rules for once that's used up, how to get another /12. Okay, this is a proposed global policy. The next step is it goes through the NRO and the ICANN ASOAC, and eventually, assuming that all goes smoothly, it'll be forwarded to ICANN for ratification as a global policy, because it's now been approved by all five of the RIRs. Okay, are there any questions about these policies which have been approved? Okay, then I'll move on to the policies which are up for discussion. The first one is the 4-byte ASN policy proposal. Essentially, it says that The 16-bit AS number space is too small. We need to extend it to 32 bits. And it proposes that... my slides don't match what I'm saying. Okay, it proposes some dates that on the 1st of January 2007... the registries, well, in particular AFRINIC, because this is an AFRINIC proposal, if AFRINIC gets a request for an AS number, and if the request doesn't say whether the organization wants a 2-byte or a 4-byte AS number, then starting in January 2007, if there's no specific request, then they'll get a 2-byte number. But they can specifically request a 4-byte number starting on this date, and then AFRINIC will assign them a 4-byte AS number. The second date is starting on the 1st of January 2009. The default just flips. Okay, so if you don't specifically say whether you want 2-byte or 4-byte, you'll get a 4-byte number. But you can specifically request a 2-byte number starting on the 1st of January 2009. And then finally, starting on the 1st of January 2010, there'll be no way to say whether you want a 2-byte or a 4-byte number. You just apply for an ASN and you get whichever's available. The registry will not differentiate between the two. Okay, so that's the essence of the 4-byte ASN proposal. But if the numeric value of that 4-byte number is small enough to fit in 16 bits, then you could view it as a 2-byte number. You're correct. Now in parallel with this, but outside the policy, of course, there'll be changes to the software implementations in your routers to allow them to cope with these 4-byte numbers. Okay, but that's not part of this proposal. That if you want to find out about the protocol side of it, how it would work in BGP, then there's an internet draft, draft-ietf-idr-as4bytes-12.txt. Does anybody know if 12 is the latest revision of that draft? I'm not sure. It's possible that there's a newer version with some number larger than 12 at the end. Okay. Any questions about this proposal? You should all have in your meeting packs a printout of the complete text of the proposal. Yes, William. Please start by identifying yourself.
William Stuckey from ZNet South Africa. I find it interesting that this proposal comes from Jeff Houston, who's presumably not an AFRINIC member.
Sure. If we go back to the policy development process, anybody, whether or not they're an AFRINIC member, is allowed to make a proposal through the mailing list. Okay. And Jordi?
Just to confirm, it's still 12. The version of the draft.
12 is the latest.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. More questions about this proposal? At the back there. Yes.
Leo Bicknell, Aaron Advisory Council. I'd just like to clarify that in the Aaron region, the text was clarified that a 4-byte ASN was a number greater than 65,536. So the situation you just described of getting a 4-byte number that could be used as a 2-byte would not exist. So I just want to let you know that that clarification occurred in Aaron.
Okay, thank you. That change hasn't been proposed in the AFRINIC region. And In any case, this is not intended to become a global policy in the formal ICANN sense. So it doesn't matter if different regions end up with slightly different flavors of the proposal. Okay. The next, before we move on to the open mic, I'm just going to talk a little and ask Jordi also to talk about the last proposal under discussion, which is the V6PI proposal. I have only one slide on this, and I'd like Jordi to talk more about it. Essentially, as I understand it, it's to allow an end user to get a /32 of PI space from a special block. Okay, Jordi, over to you, please.
Okay, the first question I would like to clarify is that we are talking about end user organizations to make it sure about the scope of the proposal. It's very, very small change, but it can have a significant different meaning. So basically, okay. I thought it was working. No. Okay, I can do like that, even if it's small. Basically, no, it's too small. Okay. Now it's okay. The idea of this proposal is to provide the solutions for organizations that require provider independent, either because they need to multi-home or because they have other reasons, such as avoid renumbering if they change the provider. What that basically means is that there may be situations where organizations have different upstream providers, they are multi-homed, or even several links to the same ISP, but there may be situations where there is a single link and there is still a need for provider independent. So one of the most interesting things of the proposal that it's being made temporary in order to avoid the problem of having PI prefixes in the routing tables in the long term. Why? Because I really believe that there will be alternative solutions. And in that case, if we have alternative solutions, we can say, okay, let's go to something that is sufficient long term so the people don't complain, have a solution now, but when this technical new solution or solutions are accepted by the community, we can define a time, I have defined it right now, 3 years, to allow to change to that solution and return that prefix. Of course, if by that time some of these organizations have changed their situation and are able to become an LIR, they will still be able to keep the prefix and not need to renumber. Okay, so what is the qualification to become or to obtain an IPv6 PI prefix under this policy? Not be an LIR, qualify for an IPv4 assignment, even if it's not holding actually that IPv4 block, so it will be equivalent to the proposal that has been just approved, the requirement, let's say. The rationale for this is sometimes the lack of provider independent is considered by some enterprises as a barrier for the deployment of IPv6, so that's what we are trying to avoid. And organizations using PI are not allowed to make further assignments. The policy allows a fair situation with other regions which could have similar policies, and it's also fair to people coming new to the IPv6 field because they can opt for a similar situation. Against the policy, well, of course, the routing table grow, but that's why I am making this proposal temporary. What is the IPv6 assignment size being proposed? /32. If a bigger block is justified, of course, it could be accepted. Also, why /32? Because there is a practice to filter prefixes which are bigger than /32, so this will avoid this type of problems where you have a smaller prefix and it's not being routed everywhere, and also because it will allow these enterprises to become an LIR if they change their situation without renumbering. Again, some people could say it's a waste of space, but being temporary is not the case. Subsequent assignments, again, if justified, and whenever possible from an adjustment block so we can make a single prefix announcement. The idea is also to assign this PI space from a super block. So if necessary, it can be filtered later or whatever, in a very, very easy way. And this is the idea of the temporarily of this proposal. So once we have a technical, valid, and deployable solution or solutions which are accepted by the community, then 3 years after the assignment expires. So again, those organizations that changed their situation, or if the policy changed in general and organizations not assigning a space to other organizations can become LIR, can still keep the same prefix. I think that's basically making this temporary is fairer to the wider community, and being a long-term expiry, probably we are considering we could have a solution in 3-4 years. So that means 3-4 years for a solution and 3 years for the expiry. We are going to 6-7 years. It's not that bad for someone to say, maybe I need to change in 6 or 7 years, maybe only. So I think it should not be a barrier in that sense. And a quick comparison, the last slide, a quick comparison between the existing allocations and what I am proposing. Minimum size is the same, maximum size exactly the same if justified. Qualifying criteria, the difference will be between what we have today, be an LIR or not to be an LIR, not be an NSight or be an NSight, plan to assign /48s, cannot assign to other organizations, plan to aggregate, cannot deaggregate, initial contract. That's something that I have not included in the proposal, but I really believe there should be a link, a contractual link, between any PI assignment and AFRINIC. I'm not sure if this is the case in the IPv4 policy. There is a contractual link. What I just said, Alan, is I am of the idea that there should be a link between who receives PI and AFRINIC. I'm not sure if that's the case. Yes. I'm not sure if that's the case with the IPv4 policy. There is a link, because in other regions there is not a link, a contractual link, and that makes the situation different. Okay? So I have not stated nothing about that in the proposal, because I assume that's a decision of the board, but maybe I am wrong. Fees, the same. I believe it should not be free to get PI space. It should contribute to the community as the rest of the LIRs. Of course, the difference is the point is, if now we are waiving the IPv6 prefix cost, there should be a consideration in the same situation probably here. And the rest I already mentioned. That's basically. And I want to say something else, which may be shocking for some people. I am against PI, but I really think it's even worse having other regions having PI and some regions not having it. An alternative to this proposal, and depending on the feedback, I am probably to send a proposal for that, could be to change the existing provider addressing to allow organizations that don't will assign to other organizations to still receive prefixes. Okay? So we have basically two situations. Either we accept PI and we have a temporary proposal, which means that maybe we are going to reclaim some space, and that means we should have appropriate reclaiming procedures that I believe are already set up for AFRINIC, or we decide, okay, we don't want to have a distinction from the contractual point of view between PI receivers and provider addresses. And that will mean changing existing policy to say you can allocate a AFRINIC to organizations that will not allocate to or assign to other organizations but to themselves. One example, what happens with a big university? They may have a lot of faculties, departments, even several campuses, distributed even in several countries maybe. They obviously need to get connectivity, and maybe it's actually technically impossible or very costly to have that space from an ISP. So I will understand that this university is actually acting as the ISP for the university, right? So that will be a very, very clear case, and this is something actually happening in other regions. For example, what happens actually in LACNIC is that they allow the university to get the space because they really understand, according to their existing policy, that the university is an ISP to the organization, okay? That's it. Questions or
okay?
Yeah. So any questions?
Someone behind.
Ray.
Ray Polzak from Aaron. Clarification. Did you say regarding you're talking about a link between the person that received PI space and the IRR? You said there was no link between the other IRRs and the people that received PI space.
In some LIRs, there is. The opposition of the communities because there is not a link.
You're talking about the LIRs.
Sorry?
LIRs, local.
No.
Regional Internet
Registries. Regional Internet Registries.
When anyone receives a number resource from Aaron, they sign a registration services agreement. There's a contractual arrangement between the two.
Yeah, but I'm not talking specifically about Aaron. I am talking in general. Phyllis can clarify that. I think maybe it's only the case for RIPE, but I prefer to talk in general because I was not sure if it's only RIPE or also is the case, for example, for LACNIC or APNIC. I don't know, but...
Well, the generality does not apply to Aaron. There is a contractual relationship.
Yeah, and I think it's the right thing to have.
Just to confirm, Jordi, in the RIPE region, there is no contractual relationship between the RIPE NCC and the end users at the moment. It's through LARs.
For AFRINIC, we also have a contractual relationship between for anybody requesting PI space or PS space, they must become a member and sign an RSA.
Good.
Yep.
Okay, I have a question. This is Alan Barrett. In which other regions have you proposed this policy, and can you give us an update on the status in those regions?
Yeah, it has been proposed in RIPE, in LACNIC, and is in the process, just a small needs, in APNIC, where I got already feedback, even if I copied to the global IPv6 discussion list, was in RIPE, where actually was presented in Istanbul. Basically, the people still keep in RIPE with the idea that there should not be PI, and it seems that this can turn in a modification. It's my feeling, and also from other people, but this is still nothing confirmed in the region, that it can turn in a modification of the existing requirement to have 200 size connected and so on, which actually it was somehow the intent of the proposal, to say to the people, hey, let's make it clear. Either we have PI or we have a solution which is alternative. The alternative solution, which is modifying the existing allocation proposal, means we are providing this space forever and we cannot reclaim it under the current circumstances, while making a temporary policy gives us that possibility. Comments in LACNIC have been basically regarding the slash 32 is too big. But again, if we go to the alternative situation, which is make these people to be able to get allocated a slash 32 as PA, it will be the same situation. So that's more or less the point right now.
Mark Elkins, wearing my POSIX hat. In the paper handout on this, on the screen on this, you spoke about a 3-year. In the paper form of this, you say possible between 3 and 4 years, which means a transition period of 3 years asking for a change in 6 to 7 years, therefore must not be considered a pain. What sort of time scale are we looking at? 3 years, 6 years, 7 years, 10 years?
The point is, I just put an example here. The point is, I am defining an expiry of 3 years after there is a technically adopted solution. If the solution we expect, at least it's my expectation, it comes in 3 or 4 years, we have 3 or 4 years plus the 3 years of the expiry. That's it. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jordi. Now we move on to the open discussion of these two proposals. If I can get this to display again. Display works, but I can't seem to get anything to happen when I press keys here. Never mind.
Okay, so we have two proposals up for discussion at this meeting. It was the 4-byte ASN proposal, which specified basically just some dates on which various defaults would change in the allocation process for AS numbers. And then we have the V6PI proposal, which Geordie has just presented. Ah, progress. Okay, so the next step then is that we have to discuss these proposals right now at this meeting. And if we fail to achieve consensus, then it goes back to the mailing list and maybe the proposer modifies the proposal and tries again. If we do achieve consensus at this meeting, then the next step is the consensus might include suggestions for minor changes. Those can be made just editorially. And then there's a 15-day last call on the mailing list, excuse me, and finally approval by the board. Okay, so the stage we're at right now is discussion of the two proposals. So open mic, anybody can say what they think about these proposals.
Hello, this is McTim again. I'd like to know from African LIRs, other African LIRs, if there's any demand for this. I mean, I personally, I'm against PI. I think it's a bad idea. I think Geordie's compromise is reasonable. But if there's no demand for PI, then there's no need to have even a compromise policy. So I'd like to hear from others if anyone has had any requests for IPv6 that they had to turn down. Because they didn't meet the policy, or they have heard. I've heard nothing on the mailing list where people said, I want IPv6 PI block.
Okay, thanks. I'd like to ask the staff, maybe Ernest, if you could say whether there's been any requests for PI space which had to be turned down because of the policy not allowing it.
We've never received any single request for PI IPv6 address space.
Okay, thanks. Does that answer your question, Tim?
Well, I was hoping for a response from the operators in the group, the LARs. Is there any demand, bottom-up demand, for IPv6? Does anybody in Africa need it? I know they need it in America. There's quite a discussion on the Aran lists and a bit in the RIPE region, a bit of discussion and a bit of demand. But maybe Alan has a point on that.
Alan Levine from Cape Town, South Africa. I think that it was a bit of an unfair question that if there's a policy that you don't give out IPv6 space, then why should anybody even ask for it? It's quite clear that there's no policy. And also, as far as LIRs are concerned, the policy allows for non-LIRs to apply for PI space, as I understand. So if you have a justification to be an LIR, in other words, you can justify that you need the minimum requirements to become an LIR, you can apply for PI IPv6 space. And I'd like to say that speaking on behalf of the Bandwidth Bar and Cooperative, we would be interested in that.
Okay, when you said the policy, did you mean the proposal or did you mean the actual policy? Okay, thank you.
William Stuckey, ZNet, South Africa. I think whether any or not anyone has hit the head against a brick wall trying to open a door that's closed at the moment is irrelevant. The point is we need to look to the future. Are people going to require this over the next several years? And if there is any thought that they might, then I think that it should go ahead.
Yeah, I think basically the point has been made. It's a question of you cannot wait to actually have the request to develop the policy because it can take 1 year, 2 years, and then it's already a bad thing for the people who is asking for that and for the development of the region in general. I also know that at least two people that I talked this week here will have the need for this. I'm not sure if they are still here. Probably they can speak up. But in any case, I think it's very important the point that the cost of having PI in the routing tables in one region, it's paid by all. And this is the main point of my proposal. Even if it's not needed in the region, we are paying the cost from doing that in other regions. I really believe that there is a need for providing a solution for this, especially in aiding where the policy is, I guess, moving ahead. I think it's still in the hands, the final decision and the implementation is in the hands of the Advisory Council. But it will happen sooner or later in every region. So I really think it's better to move, let's say, more or less at the same time. And if possible, I don't want to use global because it's not a global policy, but at least a common policy or as much closer as possible in the different regions, because this is not something that affects only the region, affects in the same way to everybody in the world.
Ray Polsak, Aaron. The policy has been adopted by the Aaron Board of Trustees. It was done on the 9th of May. We are now in a process of working through the requirements for implementation.
Thanks, Ray. That's the Aaron proposal about a /48 PI, or is it?
No, there were two proposals for IPv6 that were adopted by the board. One is to provide provider-independent space. That has been adopted by the board on the 9th of May of this year. The other proposal, which is to change the /48 to some other number, was also adopted by the Aaron board. And they are in the process of being implemented.
Okay, I'm still unclear on what's the current policy in Aaron about the size of allocations in V6 space.
Okay, the PI allocation will be a /48 from a /44. Okay?
Right, thanks.
Mark Elkins wearing my uniform hat. I know that Uniforum, the CO.ZA administrators, are looking for PI space, but it doesn't technically exist at the moment, so we can't get it. So if this does go ahead, we will ask.
One more thing that I forgot, and I think somehow applies to this, is I believe critical infrastructures right now in Afrinic cannot get IPv6 space, right? Is that correct, Ernest? Critical infrastructures cannot get IPv6. This proposal could also work for them. I mean, we have two choices. Have one policy specific for critical infrastructures on IPv6, or modify the IPv4 one that has been just approved to work also for IPv6, or having a PI policy will make it work also. So there are different possibilities. And then regarding the /48, I really believe, and that's something that I guess Aiden already considered, but I really believe using a /48 will mean some people will get PI that will not work from certain ISPs because they will get filtered. Of course, that's a decision of the region, but that's my view.
Okay. So I'm hearing lots of people saying that they, mostly from South Africa, saying that they think they want or need IPv6 PI space. I've heard very little comment from the rest of Africa, and I've heard very little discussion about what size space would be appropriate. And the current proposal up for discussion says that it talks about a /32 of PI space, whereas in the Aran region they've approved a proposal to allocate /48 of PI space. Personally, I think a /32 is very large, and perhaps a /48 would make more sense, but that's just a personal opinion, and I'd like to hear discussion about it.
Mark Elkins again. Uniform doesn't need a slash 32, and it won't need a slash 32 ever. Slash 48 would be fine, but then running a critical resource, we need to know that that space will propagate properly and won't be filtered.
Okay. Well, the RIR can never guarantee anything about filters operated by independent parties, but what the RIR can do is publish their allocation procedures, and the RIR can hope that operators who implement filters will pay attention to the published allocation policy when designing their filters. So personally, I suspect that if what you announce is the same as what you were allocated, you're unlikely to fall foul of any filters. But if you subdivide it and try to announce longer prefixes, then probably those will fall foul of the filters. But, you know, again, that can't be guaranteed. Yeah, Jordi.
I can give you a very, very simple example about this, and it's not about slash 48, it's about slash 33. APNIC has slash 32 for their own infrastructure. They subdivide and announce it in 2/33, and is not reachable for many parts of the world. It's so simple. And it's clearly announced and clearly published, and I mean, ISPs are free to do what they want. And if it takes human resources to add one prefix in their filtering table every time it's published, they don't do it, or they don't do it on time, let's say every time it's assigned, right? So, again, one additional point is maybe we don't want this proposal, but instead we want to modify the existing proposal to allow organizations to get addressing a space and be able to, instead of assigning to other organizations, keep by their own infrastructure. That may be an alternative.
I'm hearing a lot of support for this policy, and I was just wondering if there are any LIRs or anybody else that has anything against this policy for any particular reason.
Well, I'm not an LIR, but I'm against this policy because I think a slash 32 is too large and that a slash 48 would be much less wasteful of the address space. You know, it's our duty to conserve the address space.
As much as I support Jordi's idea, I think that this policy needs some discussion on the mailing list before we either approve or not. I think just a few minutes of discussion is not nearly enough. I personally am against sort of the general concept of PI, as is Jordi, and I think that even if Jordi's proposal is sound, it's the nose of the camel under the tent, so to speak.
Okay. I've heard very little discussion of the AS number, the 4-byte ASN proposal. In terms of the policy development process, we have to have consensus at this meeting to go ahead with it, and if nobody says anything, then that'll probably be read as absence of consensus, and that would stall the policy. Personally, I think it's a good proposal, and I'd like to see it go ahead, but the board will find it impossible to do that without clear consensus at this meeting.
I will be in favor of that proposal, and I will ask everyone who don't object to also move ahead and speak up.
Mark Elkins, I'm also in favor of this proposal, although it won't affect Africa, I believe, for quite a few years from a running out point of view, but I believe that we have to go ahead with it, yes.
Yes, I thought we were on the PI and we'd get to the 4-byte ASN, but I'm also in favor of the 4-byte ISN policy, as is my LIR, and I, But again, that requires some further discussion. AS numbers are like IPv4, a limited finite resource, and we have to move at some point to expand them.
Okay. Well, the format, yeah, about which proposal we're discussing, I think it's open for discussion of both. Yeah. The 4-byte ASN proposal does not propose changing the criteria for how you would get an ASN. That remains the same. You have to be multi-homed, etc. It's only about the size, whether it would be a 2-byte or a 4-byte number. And I think it's very simple. I don't see why it would be controversial. Perhaps we could have a show of hands to indicate consensus. Who is in favor of the 4-byte ASN policy proposal? Okay, and everyone. This policy development process is open to everyone, not only to AFRINIC members. Okay, and who is against the 4-byte ASN proposal? Okay, so I see about half the room in favor and about half the room not saying anything.
Silvio Almeida from Angola. What I want to say is I think this proposal is most of the country they didn't test the IPv6 and don't know the needs. I think we need still make some tests and then know exactly what prefix to use. Not maybe in this moment we have not in position to assume that to say that this is good or bad.
Okay, so that was about the V6 proposal. You're saying that we don't have enough experience of deployment to make decisions about allocation policy. Not sure I agree with that. I think we need to have some kind of policy, even if we have to later on change it as we get more experience. Okay, I see some mics turned on over there. Right. Any more discussion about any of these proposals? My kind of rough feeling is that I think we have consensus to go ahead on the 4-byte ASN, and I think we have no consensus really, or insufficient consensus on the V6 proposal. I'm not sure about that, though.
I would just like to reiterate, Uniforum wants to play with IPv6, and it has to be provider independent. It can't be locked down to any particular ISP. Why not go? But it needs to be routable. There's no point having it not routable. So why not? And thinking about it, other critical infrastructure like peering points, I don't think needs to be IPv6 enabled, because people are still able to build tunnels and other things like that over that type of infrastructure. So it's CCTLDs, those types of organizations that actually need it. And there are how many countries in Africa? How many, therefore, allocations do you actually need? It's not a large number. So I would like to suggest that we go along with the current proposal on IPv6. And as time goes by, maybe we can come up with the concept of some sort of swamp address space or a single allocation that critical infrastructure can come out of at the end of the day. But we need to start testing and we need to start using IPv6 in COSA now. That's what our customers are asking. Not tomorrow, but now.
Okay, and but you said earlier that you don't need a /32, that a /48 would be enough, right?
But it does have to be routable.
Right, of course, but nobody can guarantee that. Even if it's a slash 32, nobody can guarantee that it's routable. Okay, let's move on. Alan.
I think that one can fairly assume that a slash 32 is going to be routable. But there is the potential that a slash 48 may not be routable. And as such, I think it would be unfair to hold up this policy, considering that the largest registry on the continent is quite clearly saying that they need it now. To hold up this proposal based on the fact that this might be too large an allocation, I think, is potentially unfair.
Bill Woodcock, I would agree with both the prior speakers in that I don't see any reason why you should be putting people in Africa further behind on this. There are other RIRs that are moving forward, and you can. There's no impediment to you moving forward at the same rate other RIRs do. I don't think that worrying about the size right now matters too much. You're going to have just a couple of applicants probably in the first year, and I would suggest that you just move forward, see if there's a problem. If there's a problem, correct it later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we have many options open to us. If this meeting has consensus on moving forward with the proposal as written, we can do that. If this meeting has no consensus, then we have to stall the proposal. And another possibility is that this meeting could have consensus on some kind of change to the proposal. I seem to be hearing a lot of silence and a few people saying that they'd like to move forward with the proposal as written. Any more comments? Yes, a comment at the back there.
Yeah, my name is Tobias. I work for an ISP. Talking on behalf of an LIR, I think, especially in the Kenyan region, our main concern, irrelevant of whether the proposal is passed or not, is creating an awareness in terms of the benefit, the objectives of the particular project. Again, it would also be very important to know that once the proposal is passed, how long will we take to be able to put it into action? Because I think that will really, really affect us, so that we don't wait until the last minute, then people are pushed towards implementation. Then it happens when people are not prepared, and then we end up hitting a dead wall.
Okay. The proposal itself doesn't say anything about the implementation timescale, but I would assume that the staff would implement it as soon as possible after it's ratified by the board. And I don't foresee any delays there. I think it should be a fairly simple and quick process. Perhaps Ernest or Adele could comment on the implementation timescale if it is approved. Okay, Adele saying there should be no problem.
Can I point out we've got a chicken and egg situation? Unless the country registries CCTLDs. Unless CCTLDs, or when CCTLDs encourage IPv6 to be used, then people will start using it. When people start using it, then there will be more demand. So until CCTLDs start using it, there won't be a demand for IPv6 and we can all go home. If we don't have this, any CCTLD that then gets IPv6 from its upstream will be basically tied into that upstream. I don't see that as being a terribly healthy situation for a CCTLD to be in?
I slightly disagree on this. Let me explain why. To start using IPv6, it's not necessary to have support in CCTLDs. Actually, it's very good to have support in CCTLDs, especially if you are having IPv6 only networks. But this is not today most of the case. I don't want to discourage, in the other way around, CCTLDs to move ahead, but we need to make clear that one thing is not related to the other. In fact, I think the demand for IPv6 is already coming, and most of the ISPs are not noticing it. Most of the traffic is today using transition mechanisms, and when we have in a few months Windows Vista, which comes with IPv6 enabled by default, we will see much more IPv6 traffic than what we can expect. So the point is actually, if there are organizations that don't implement IPv6 because they cannot get a prefix for that, those organizations will be providing a not so good quality of service, as perceived quality of service to the user, because they will be using always transition mechanisms instead of having native or local transition mechanisms in their own network. I think that's the important point here. So again, it's a question of, even if this policy can be implemented in just, let's say, 2 or 3 months because the board takes some time or whatever, why wait for 1 year when the demand is already here today?
Okay, I didn't see anybody suggesting that we should wait for 1 year. I'm still trying to gauge the consensus of the room. I'm going to ask a three-way question, and I'd like a show of hands for the three choices. Who thinks the policy should be stalled or abandoned? Don't put your hands up yet. Who thinks that it should go ahead exactly as written, with the three-year fade-out period, 3 years after a better technical solution comes along, and with a /32 size? And who thinks that there should be some kind of modification to either of those criteria of the time scale or the size? Okay, so those will be the three questions that I ask. Okay, so let's start. Who thinks that the proposal should be stalled or cancelled or just go away? One person at the back there. Would you like to speak, or are you just showing your hand?
No, I always want to speak. Of course, this is McTim again from Uganda. I'll try and keep it short. Much as I support Jordy's global view of the future IPv6 routing table, I think we need more discussion. So I think it needs to be stalled, get some discussion on the mailing list, and then we can talk about these size issues and other issues.
Okay, thanks. And then the second part of my three-way question was, who thinks the proposal should go ahead exactly as written, with the 3-year fade-out period and the /32 size? Okay, thank you. And who thinks that there should be some small changes, either to the timeout period or to the size? I'm allowed to have an opinion, I think. Okay, right. So I saw slightly more people saying it should go ahead as written. Very few people saying it should be stalled. Okay, I do think we need more discussion, and we have another 10 or 15 minutes before lunch. Some of the people who think that there should be changes to the proposal could speak about the changes they'd like to see. I've already done that, so somebody else, please.
Sorry, this is McTim again from Uganda. I think that we need to give some indication of whether we're going to follow what Afrinic does in V4 space and have a link, a charge. If there's no fee for IPv6 PI, and eventually the waiver for PA V6 space ends, then you can get the same block for free, whereas if you're an LIR, you have to pay for it. Well, I think we just should talk about the charging just a bit, give the board some direction.
Anyone else? I saw several people saying that they'd like to see some changes to the proposal. Please, could those people say what changes they'd like to see?
Mark Elkins, can I ask what happens in other areas, other regions?
Okay. My understanding is that in the Arran region, they have approved a proposal to give /48 PI space, and that it's still up for discussion in APNIC, RIPE, and LACNIC. Is that right?
Phyllis Yilmaz for the RIPE NCC. In RIPE region, it is still under discussion, and it seems like it's going to be under discussion for at least another 4 weeks. That's the minimum we are looking at.
Son Juan from APNIC. We are still waiting for Jody to send us the proposal, so we haven't had any discussion on this one.
No, actually, the proposal was sent also to the mailing list, but there has not been any discussion. Was not formally sent, but is already there in just, I guess, a couple of days. It's just waiting for some grammar modifications to make the people in the region reading it easily. That's the only reason it has not been sent before. I think Herman is not here. So I can probably mention it will be presented next week in Guatemala. There has been some discussion, not that much, but some discussion in the mailing list. And basically, the discussion has been regarding the size of the allocation. Maybe there is an alternative question. I know it's not very, let's say, very clean in the sense that there is not an alternative proposal sent yet, but an alternative question could be if the community will accept better than PI modifying the existing allocation to allow allocations to organizations that are not going to sub-assign to other organizations. I'm not sure if I am being clear. That could be a possibility, and maybe it's an additional question.
Okay, I think your suggestion is clear, but I would say that if you change the current proposal to allow allocation to people who won't sub-allocate, really that is PI, just under a different name. Alan?
I think it is important that we reach consensus on this, and whilst there's concerns about reducing the size of allocation, it might be prudent to allow for that in order to enable this actual policy. In light of Jeff's presentation in Cairo, I think that also may be prudent, but it also may be prudent with such a policy for AFRINIC to retain the /48 block, the balance, the remainder of those /48 blocks, should we change the policy to increase that PI size in the future.
Okay. I have a suggestion for how we can move forward. I think we have broad consensus here that some kind of IPv6 PA space would be a good thing. And the remaining questions seem to be about the fee structure and the size. So I would suggest that we can discuss those things during the 15-day last call on the mailing list. Is that Ray?
Just a clarification on the routing issue. While the policy in the Arran region is to allocate a /48 out of a /44 to individual PI applicants, the entire PI allocation is to come from a range, a pre-identified range, And so it will not be provided random throughout the IRRs, through Aaron's available space. And the policy left it up to staff to identify what that particular range would be.
Thanks. My understanding is that the V6 proposal from Geordie is more or less the same in that regard, that it requests the RIR to identify a super block from which these allocations will be made. And in turn, that'll have the effect of allowing ISPs who have filters to use the super block as part of their filtering, and they can have different filters in different parts of the V6 space. Okay. Do we have consensus for moving this proposal to the last call on the mailing list, and to allow the mailing list discussion to determine or to provide guidance to the board for the few details like the fee structure and the size of the space? I see lots of nodding heads. Okay, thank you. Any further comments before we break for lunch? Right, thanks. Ideal.
Just before we go for lunch, we have a very small change in the agenda. We have a presentation from Gaurab. It's a very short presentation because yesterday we discussed about prefix filtering. We did some tests with him and Vishal, and he wants to present quickly something about it. I think it's useful for the community. So it's a very short presentation. After that, I think we have an announcement also from AFRISPA before the AGM, because some people may be leaving during the AGM. There is an announcement. Thank you.
Works. Thank you. Thank you, Ariel. As I talked yesterday before we broke up, FNIC staff as well as Philip and a couple of us have been getting this feedback from FNIC LIRs that the internet is not working for them since they got the new block of IP addresses from FNIC. So we said, let's go out and figure out why the internet is not working for them. So the story here is about 41/8. FNIC started to allocate address space from this block earlier this year sometime, February. And so we looked through it, and it's a pretty short presentation on what we did to figure out what was wrong. So this is the current allocation that I could pull off the APNIC website. They've done some actually fair amount of allocations from there, 1/13, 1/14, 2/16. We can go through it. There's a lot of allocations in the /22 range, of course, 11 of them, which is the minimum allocation for that. So you can get hold of the slides and go through this, but this data is also available on the FNIC FTP website that you can download it from. Okay, so we looked at a couple of people who actually complained rather than, you know, trying to figure out all of them. What we found out was FNIC knew that there can be problems with the Bogon filters, so they actually had a test block assigned to Nisal or Internet Solutions. Is Nisal here in this room somewhere? Yeah, he's in the back. So both of us worked on this yesterday and this morning. So this block was assigned to IS, and IS actually announced it to their upstream, and then their one IP address was provided, and this was announced on NANOG and other mailing lists as a test IP address so that people could trace to it and then see if, you know, there are filters, active filters in place. So that was a good thing. What we also found out that
was that all the large allocations, the /13, /14, /16, /18s, they have not reported any problems. And their network seems to be working pretty well, which means that I think most of the /8 filters or people have actually updated the Bogon's filters and removed the /8 from their route filters. But then there are a lot of many smaller allocations which are not working. And what we also found out was IS is also providing connectivity to other downstream ASNs who have received this allocation from this block. So they have also not complained, right? And so the whole result was we do think that, you know, this is probably a lot of isolated instances where people have old filters or something else is not working well, right? So what we did as a methodology, and actually this is what I wanted to present because we probably won't be here every day or talking to you every time. So each time you receive a new allocation, you should not be, you know, bugging Efrenik about it. So this is what we did. We ran trace routes to the test IP address that Nissal has from around 40 locations on the internet. And I used our own servers, but you can go to traceroute.org and it will list you, you know, multiple looking glasses in multiple continents. So you can use a public resource to trace back to the IP address. We also did trace route to the unreachable IP address from our test IP router. So after talking to Busnet and Philip provided me another IP address, so we actually did trace to those IP addresses, which were reported to be unreachable from 41/8 from our test box, which was in the 41/8 test block that was assigned by Efrenik to Internet Solutions. So we also, and then what we did was we looked through the RIPE looking glass, ris.ripe.net/... go and find it, to see if the prefixes are visible at multiple locations. So if you go to the RIPE website, there is a looking glass, and we use the prefix in question, the /20 and /22, to see if they are actually visible on the internet, right? If they are actually, you know, passing, or if they are actually reaching their upstream. And in most cases, we actually saw them there, which means that we could find out who their upstreams were, who their immediate peers were, you know, whether they are multi-homing or not, and things like that. So we basically look and find what the AS path was. And then we looked through the Efrenik WHOIS database and the IRR entries for the prefixes in question. So again, after finding out the AS numbers from the looking glass, we looked through all the different AS in the AS path to see what their routing policies said on the IRR, which can be the RADB or RIPEDB or whatever. So fairly standard, you know, troubleshooting procedure when your new prefix doesn't work. So I'll give you an example of two prefixes that we actually looked through because they complained about it here. And one of them was Busnet in Uganda. They have 41.220/20 allocated, AS number 29032. What we found out was it's most likely an IRR issue because the data in the IRR that they have was inconsistent. So their entry to the IRR said they were exporting and receiving prefixes from a different ASN, and their upstream said something else, right? Which means that if somebody was building filters because they found it inconsistent, you know, very likely that these prefixes were put into, you know, either spoofed or something. So they've gone and fixed it last night, and I haven't heard back whether things are working again. So my team can probably report on it. So, and then what they also told us was they mainly had problems reaching Italy and Germany, two websites were given that we were using for test purposes. So that was one. The other one was 41.223.244/0/22, allocated to CyberTech in South Africa. And this route was being originated by AS32427. Yes, this was 32427. And they were buying transit from DataPro in South Africa, again, 11845, I think. And 11845 has transit from Level 3 Antelia, 1299 and 3356. And all of this you can go and find out by looking at the looking glass, RIPE looking glass, any number of other looking glasses. This block actually doesn't have IRR entry. I didn't see anything on that block, right? but it is visible globally, but it is being, you know, propagated through the system. That is fine. I mean, I don't see a problem with that because the upstream actually has an entry for this block, so that is fine. So there is no question about having an inconsistent entry, which was the case with the earlier example. This particular block actually reported problems with one particular customer getting to CNN.com. I mean, I don't know why people go to CNN, but yes, that was a problem. And I think Philip Smith resolved this earlier in the week and talked with Level 3, and Level 3 seems to say that this is a problem with this particular customer, and we have asked them to remove the filters. So that was the thing. And incidentally, or interestingly, both of these have AS1299 in their AS path or their immediate upstream. Right? And I'll tell you why this fact has to be noted. Because I talked to Nisal this morning. I said, hey, listen, this guy also have this problem from DataPro. And he said, oh, they are also have Telia as their upstream. You know, it's like kind of there's the common factor between these two problem incidents as Telia. And it's actually not Telia, but I'll tell you one. So what I say there, if you see this problem again, make sure that your IRR entries are very, very properly done. Either you don't make an entry and let your upstream handle those entries, or if you make an entry, make sure that they are consistent. Right? Don't put in stale information there. Remove the stale information. Make it consistent. That's it. Nobody look for, you know, your IR. If they don't find your entry, then they look for your upstream entries, and that works. But if you make a wrong entry, then most people will probably filter you out. Right? Again, ripe region ISPs really insist that your entries in the IRR be consistent. And that's what my mention with Telia was, is Telia is a primarily a European ISP, believes in the ripe DB. So they probably put the information in their DB the way it works, the way the routing is working. But then, and then people look at their information, and the information about BusNet in the ripe DB found an inconsistency and said, well, this doesn't fit, we'll drop it, right? So especially if you are talking with European ISPs, and if you get complaints getting into Europe, check your IRR entries first, the ripe DB. And you know, they are really, really insistent about this. This doesn't happen so much in North America, but yes, in the ripe region, if you get problems, in most cases, it is actually the IRR entry, or you not having an entry, or having a wrong entry. And then other things you can do is run trace routes and see where the trace route dies. This actually might not be a very, very good idea these days, where people actually block ICMP on their network, thinking it is a security problem. So A, don't block ICMP on your networks. You can go to simru.com and know what ICMP types to block and what not to block. Don't block trace routes. But yes, if you face a problem, don't go and complain to Ernest. If you have to complain to Ernest, send a trace route so that he can tell you where it actually died or where the problem is. Or if you have to send a trace route to the AFNOG mailing list, you know, have to report the problem, please send a trace route so that other people can look through it and help. Other thing that you can do is if you are having problems switching a particular server on the other end, then you can actually call them on phone or something, you know, and then try to do a trace route from that end towards you and see if there is someone in the middle who is actually blocking it. Again, what to do if you see this problem, then you email or work out with the people where the trace dies to resolve the problem. So main thing here is trace. You just see where it dies and then, you know, try to resolve it. As I said, a lot of people do block ICMP. So you'll have to be a bit more careful on whether, you know, the place where a trace dies actually is the place where, you know, the problem is. So doing a reverse trace from the other direction is also very useful. Generally, your upstream may have more influence to get those filters removed, and you should start by contacting them. You know, making a lot of noise on the mailing list may help in the NANOG region, but probably won't help elsewhere. And so what you have to do is you are buying transit from your upstream. So go bug your upstream first. And if your upstream has enough clue, they'll fix it for you. Because they'll make sure that it is working. They'll help you with it. Most often, upstreams are pretty good with it. You know, if your upstream doesn't help you, change the upstream. I think that's the message, right? So, and then if your upstream is not able to resolve that, it's a good idea to then contact the other side directly, right? But always, I think it's a good idea to talk to the upstream. That's what we did with Level 3 was we talked with Label 3 and they said, oh, this is a particular problem customer, we're trying to get them to change the filters. So they actually already knew about the problem, right? So good idea to talk to the upstream before, you know, making a lot of noise and mailing list. That probably won't be so useful. Also make sure that your own routers don't have filters, right? We've seen this. Last year we did a training course, and then one of the guys said, I can't access part of the internet. I mean, new websites like Skype and all this. So we said, let's go and have a look, and realize that he actually had bogons from around 2001 on his own routers, right? So check and make sure that your own routers actually don't have filters that are ancient. Last slide, observations. What we think would be nice is, and that's what Nishal would probably have to do, is have a trace utility from the test block so that, you know, it's a question of either having a slash, figuring out whether the entire slash 8 is being blocked or it's like subset of the slashes that are not getting through. These are two different cases. If the slash 8 is completely being blocked and somebody still has old bogon filters, they need to update that. If their slash 8 trace from a slash 8 subset of that slash 8 is getting through, then they've removed the bogons, but there's something else downstream with the subset, which generally points to the IRR direction or something with the routing. So that would be probably very nice. Another observation we had, and as I said in the beginning, we actually didn't see a lot of problems with the slash 8 itself, but mostly with subset. So it's probably, you know, incidental. You have to go and dig through it. And as I said, if you are facing this problem, I outlined what we did, and that's one of the ways to solve it. There's really no other way to, you know, there's no magic word that will go and solve it. So, thanks. Any questions? Okay.
No,
yes.
Excuse me. So you said that often incorrect IRR entries were a problem. Are there any tools which make it easy to find out whether your prefix has a correct or an incorrect IRR entry?
Who is -h, who is .radb.net, space AS, blah, 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 blah. Right, that's it. Well, what I can do is actually before I send this slide to Efrenik, I can add a list of commands to my slides if people are happy with it so that, you know, you can go and run through that. Yes, I think I have a question there.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, what
can
is...
Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, Herbert Mauser, BT UK. What is special about 41/8 that is having reachability problems? What's special about that IP prefix?
Oh, you haven't been around for a while.
Yes.
41/8 was allocated by INA to Efrenik last year, and they started announcing or allocating space from 41/8 in February this year. So up to a year ago, that was unallocated space or was part of the bogons filters. So people still have bogon filters saying that this is unallocated, unassignable space. And we are trying to get that fixed. And this is something that comes up quite often in the NANOG mailing list. And I think now there's three new prefixes, 126, 120. I saw that mail yesterday. Or APNIC, what are you getting, Son? 125, 126, and 127? Not 127. Yeah, 125, 126, and one more. Three slashes coming to APNIC. So they'll go through the same issue again.
Do you have this issue?
Yes. Similar. There were people that don't have that.
Any other questions?
But time go by, people.
Okay. Thank you to Nishal also. And if you have questions, you can talk to me or Nishal or other people who can help you. Thank you. Thank you, Adil.
Hi, everybody. I know everybody is really feeling hungry now and wants to go and start having lunch. So I'll be very quick. This is not PowerPoint. It's just a quick statement. One of the other hats I wear is as general manager for the African Internet Service Providers Association, which is AFRISPA. And I have a short statement that I'd like to read. Recently, there has been some confusion and misunderstanding around the dates, program, and identity of the AFNOG, AFRINIC, ISOC, and AFRISPA events, which are taking place in Nairobi. This was occasioned by AFRISPA's email announcement of our AGM and other events during this week in Nairobi. AFRISPA was unaware of the ISOC INET day planned for tomorrow, Thursday. The date that we suggested clashed initially with INET, and naturally, once we became aware of the clash, we changed AFRISPA's date. We'd like to sincerely apologize to ISOC, AFNOG, and AFRINIC, and the community for this oversight. Secondly, the wording of AFRISPA's announcement was interpreted by some to imply ownership of the AFNOG or AFRINIC identities. This was entirely unintended. AFRISPA is one of several internet-related Pan-African organizations. We believe that there is room for all of these organizations to work effectively in furthering the internet in Africa. There never was and never has been any intention to interfere, obstruct, or inhibit the identity and value of the meetings being carried in Nairobi by these three organizations. More importantly, we'd like to publicly declare that AFRISPA is 100% committed to supporting AFNOG, AFRINIC, AFTLD, ISOC, and any other future AFSTAR organizations in their various roles and activities around the continent. We recognize that each organization has a unique role and contribution to the continent. AFRISPA is currently engaged in discussing an MOU with AFRINIC. Discussions on an MOU with AFNOG have also commenced, and it is felt that these agreements will help increase the levels of collaboration, cooperation, but more importantly, communication between those organizations. And finally, AFRISPA would like to state total commitment to the vision of a dynamic AF Star movement, which brings together the various AF organizations. This vision was born back in 1998, as we heard earlier this week, and has led to the birth of these organizations that are having a massive impact on the development of Africa's information and communication sectors. AFRISPA will be holding a forum and annual general meeting in Jumbo 2 on Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and a social event at the Galileo's Club thereafter. So we welcome all of you to attend. I had written a small note at the bottom over here. Oh, beer for Ni. Lots of beer for you, Ni. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Adiel. I'm very sober this afternoon. Very quickly, we'll be having the elections this afternoon, and everybody who's eligible to vote, every organization eligible to vote and accredited, would have a ballot in their pack. Please check your pack. There is a blue sheet of paper. That's the ballot. You will need it in the afternoon. So if you do not have it here, please bring it along. The procedure is clearly stated on the ballot. By the right time, I'll step you through what we will do. But suffice to say, please ensure that you bring your ballot in the afternoon. If also we have the representative of MTN Uganda with their proxy here, please make yourself known to either myself, Adiel, or Harish. And also CBINet, the representative of CBINet, would like to see you because we still have the pack for those two eligible voters uncollected. Envy Fraser is also here, I'd like to see you, as well as Timothy Kosolo. We want to wrap everything up before the afternoon.
Sorry for not having informed you earlier, but Enver Fraser told me that he wouldn't be able to make it to this meeting.
Okay, thank you. I wish you had told me that. Yes, Alan.
I have a question. Is the members' meeting open to non-members? In other words, are non-members allowed to attend but not to vote?
Yes, the AGM is open to everybody as observer, but the vote happened. I mean, that's why the only member has the ballot, so the member only can vote. Check your ballot also and make sure that you have the stamp behind and the ballot, because ballot without the stamp is invalid.
Okay, is there any other question? We'd still have time for this in the afternoon, but we just want to make sure that you are aware and we don't take anybody by surprise. All right, thanks, Alan.